Welcome to the Third Realm Integration Podcast, where our unconscious minds meet and the transformation begins. I am your host, Megan Kenny, licensed psychotherapist, soul retrieval shamanic healer, and heart conscious practitioner. Let's get started. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Third Realm Integration Podcast, where our unconscious minds meet and the transformation begins. What is going on with y'all? How are we doing? How are we doing out here? I'm hearing the birds chirping. I got my fan going. It's nice and hot here in the south. Not mad about it. Not mad about it at all. I feel like I've adjusted well to the heat. I think one of the main things that you have to do in order to work with a hot and humid climate is to surrender and go with the flow. Allow yourself to just be all sweaty and don't even feel the need to change anything about it. Just roll with it. Just full acceptance. Just radical acceptance at that point. And it's a nice preparation for headed to Thailand, where I'm told it's a million times hotter than it is here in the SC. And very humid. And I'm actually going in the rainy season, so it's going to be even more humid. So I'm just prepping. So I don't run the AC in my space, in my office, in my house. And unless, you know, you have to act because of the humidity, you do actually have to run it probably like once a week, just for a little bit to get the moisture out. But otherwise, I'm just like rolling with it. And I used to never be able to sleep in the heat. And I still can't sleep if it's like stale air. But if I have a fan going, I've been able to make this work. So I'm just going to keep going with it. So that's what I'm doing today. Today is a hot and humid, sunny, well, a little bit of an overcast Saturday. And I'm recording some of these episodes in advance because I'm just, like I said on the last episode, I'm just feeling the groove. I'm grooving it. I'm feeling the podcast vibe right now. So I wanted to jump on here. I don't even know how long this episode's going to be. Probably not even that long, because I really just wanted to jump on and talk about this one aspect of my teachings that I've acquired along the way that I'm sure is part of a quantum physics theory, whether it's simulation theory, holographic universe theory, string theory, some other freaking theory, right? Everything's a theory. And I probably will actually, there was an episode on the Gaia channel with a woman who I believe had actually worked for the FBI or the CIA, in which she had documentation that was being, I don't even think just reviewed by the government, but had actually been put out by the government around how we actually do live in a holographic universe. Which essentially means that everything that we're seeing isn't what we think it is. And I think what it really means is that we actually live in a two-dimensional reality, not a three-dimensional reality. But because the way that the light and the prisms and whatever reflect, it looks like it's a 3D reality, but it's really not. I don't know. All I know is that that's about as deep as it gets. You can't really go much deeper than that. So I think I'm going to rewatch that, bridge what the woman says, and be able to give the information on the show so you guys can go and watch the episode. But bridge that information with what I know on the metaphysical, spiritual, and healing side of it and give my take on that. So I think what I'm going to talk about today actually is probably in some theoretical model in quantum physics. But my teacher taught me about it, and then it got reinforced with what I've learned from Dolores Cannon and what she talks about. And also, I think, now that's simulation theory. about how there's an actual, there's somebody or something beyond us that's actually programming the experiment that we are all in. It's so funny. Every time I think about this idea that we are in an experiment, which we absolutely are on many different levels, I think about how angry, like irate, like rageful everybody was, and probably some people still are, during all of COVID and the whole thing about the vaccine, and everybody that was like flipping out and saying like, how dare you not get the vaccine, and how dare you get the vaccine. And everybody's yelling at each other and flipping out. And it's just like the best meme of all time that probably got taken down that ever hit the social media waves during COVID was the meme that said, we're all part of the experiment. I'm just in the control group. It's like you're in that group getting tested in this way. I'm in this group getting tested in this way. It's like, we're all in the freaking experiment. Like, why is everybody tripping so hard? So anyway, what I wanted to talk about today is the concept that, I don't even know what I would call this. It definitely is a reflection of our state of consciousness and thinking about our state of consciousness as a vibration, a frequency. Vibration is when the energy takes form. And the frequency probably is too. But when Dolores Cannon says that when you are faced with the crossroads on needing to make a decision and you choose one path over another, you take the job and you leave the other job, or you don't take the job, or you get married, or you don't get married. So it's like whatever your decision is, there's another decision that you could have made. I could have taken the job. I could not have taken the job. I could have gotten married. Could not have. Could have had kids. Or did have kids, didn't have kids. And so this idea that we think the only reality that exists is the reality that is lined up with the choice that we made. Oh, I decided to leave the world of clinical psychology and move into the realm of transpersonal psychology. Oh, well, I decided to get clean and sober and live my life according to that path. Well, And not continue using and stay down that path. And what Dolores Cannon says, and I've heard this from other people as well, is that there is simultaneously happening at the same time that we made the decision, there is another version of us living out the life of the other choice, going on about their life in a reality that we don't have access to. We don't see, we don't know about, we don't know it exists. So here I am. I'm in the world of clinical psychology. I decide it is time to make a hard right turn and get the hell out of there. So I jump over here, finish up my PhD in transpersonal psychology. That's the path that I put myself on. Well, there's the old Megan, but I wouldn't even say the old Megan, another version of Megan that chose to stay in the world of clinical psychology, living her life on that path. It's like, what? Oh yeah, no, that's why, this is where it comes down to time and space being an illusion. And it's so funny, because in one of Dolores Cannon's talks, she says, she was at some conference, and there was some like quantum physicist or whatever that was presenting, and he said, human beings are the only beings anywhere in the universe that have figured out a way, that has figured out a way to measure something that doesn't even exist, which is time. And she gives the example of how when we are communicating with people that are in different time zones. So when I was in Europe, I was 6 hours ahead. When I called people back in the States, and they called me, they didn't have to wait 6 hours for me to answer the phone. They called me and I answered the phone. Although I have to say there were parts of Europe that I was in where their electrical grid was not even able to sustain the amount of people that were there. And this was like the off season. So that's a totally different story. But so there were times where people called me and I couldn't get the call and vice versa. But anyway, I digress. The point being is that time is a concept and a construct that only exists here on Earth, and that doesn't actually even exist at that. The only thing we know is that the sun goes up, sun goes down, moon goes up, moon goes down. This whole idea of time, it's so interesting. I don't even know where the hell it came from. I'd like to look into that. Who came up with the concept of time? Because it was definitely, it must have been a Taurus or a Capricorn, probably a Capricorn, or not even a Virgo. It was an earth sign, though. It was somebody that was really, and maybe even a fixed sign. Maybe probably a Taurus, because they are pretty much ruled by time and space. As an archetype, a zodiac archetype. Very earthly. And it's just incredible. It's like, how did we get to the point where now we're starting to question this idea of time? And like, those of us in the metaphysical space, it's like, yeah, time. We know time doesn't exist the way that we've been taught, because we time travel. We jump into other dimensions through meditation. We know what the meaning of that is. Even if we take the pathway of psychedelics, which I'm learning is not even the same pathway. It's an entirely different pathway. I used to think that you could take psychedelics to get to where like rigorous meditation practice would bring you, and it just put you there faster and with less work, and therefore could be considered in part spiritual bypassing because you're not actually doing the work to get there. You took a drug to fast track you. It's actually not even, you're not even in the same dimension. It's so, now we're talking about a holographic universe, because I haven't even thought about that yet. I'll come back to you on that. But this idea that there's many versions of ourself existing at the exact same time. There is no past, present, and future. Although I would like somebody to describe like the aging process of the physical body. Time seems real with that, because it's like, is the baby version of me still existing? Even though I was morphing into a teenager, an adult. Like, how does that work? But maybe that's just an evolutionary process of the physical body. Maybe we can still separate that from time. I don't know. But this idea that there's multiple versions of me existing at the exact same time. The past, perceived past, the present, and the future. It's already happened. It's already happening. And it's like multiple lanes on a highway, all running at the exact same time. And this is where my teacher would call these ego tracks. And she would use the metaphor of when we used to go to the library, even though we, in this age, who's really going to the library much anymore? If you are, right on. I love it. You're my hero. But for most of us, we're getting our information online or through audiobooks or YouTube, whatever. So the idea when you would go into the library to find your book and you'd have to look it up and you'd pull out the little drawers with all the little cards in them. Each drawer is a different ego track, and you have the capacity to jump into any track that you want to be in. I could jump into the track of the other version of me that chose to stay on drugs. I could go back. Because I was once familiar with that. So I could jump over to that track. I could jump over to the track in which I am petrified that I am not going to make it in life, that I'm not going to be where I want to be at some point, that I'm not going to achieve the goals that I want to achieve, or that I'm not going to have any means of survival. I'm not going to have a home. I'm not going to have money. I'm not going to have resources. Scarcity mindset. I could jump into that one. I could jump into, that's all negative thinking. I could jump into the track in which I keep my consciousness really constricted and get really bent out of shape about small stuff, lose sight of the bigger picture, complain, get aggravated, get annoyed. I could jump into that track. I could jump into the track where I'm in now, where I see things from a much bigger picture, and I'm looking at the metaphysical, way beyond the physical, looking at that from that perspective, that's where I see life now. And that may change, right? It could change with the types of food that I eat. It could change with substances that I ingest. It could change with people that I'm around and energies that I am absorbing. And I could be driven right back down to a lower vibration and I could get stuck there for a little bit. All of which, though, are different ego tracks. Sometimes we get thrown into one. Sometimes we can just choose one. Really, though, if you think about it, it all comes down to choice. We all can choose to manifest whatever reality we want. It's just that, in my experience, it's either done consciously or unconsciously. And whenever it's done unconsciously, it just feels like the life is being done to us. That's what I was talking about in the last episode about fate. Oh, it's my fate to just be whatever. Screwed over all the time. Not find love. Not have this. Not have that. And when you shift your perspective and come from a place of abundance and gratitude to say, like, wait a second, I could just focus on what I don't have or what I'm trying to achieve that I don't have in this current moment. And then I'm always going to feel like I just don't ever have enough. Or I could look at it from the perspective of what am I grateful for and what do I have? And if I compared myself today to the experience of me, just to use time as a frame, 5 years ago, it's like, dude, you've accomplished a lot. And everybody should be able to say that about themselves. Even if it feels like you're still doing the same thing over and over again. Like people that are trying to get clean and sober. Okay, I'm trying to get clean and sober. I keep falling off the wagon, keep falling off the wagon. I still have not maintained an extended period of sobriety. But if I pause right now and think back where I was 5 years ago, are you in a better place? And not just measure it by this subjective definition of necessarily better. Do you know more and have you learned more? And have you grown in that way? Not like, do you have more money? Did you acquire more skills? Did you get a better job? Whatever, whatever. Not necessarily that. So it really all depends on what our construct of progress is in the first place. It's kind of like why... Well, I'm going to go off on a totally different subject right now. But I don't work with people typically under the age of 25 anymore. And there's a reason for that. A few reasons, actually. People who are adolescents, or in my experience now under the age of 25, and a lot of people in the consciousness world would back this up, especially in the world of meditation. Their ego is not strong enough yet to be dissolved or to surrender. In fact, they're still in the process of needing to build up that hero ego. So you're going to do harm if you're going to try to break that ego down. And typically that's what you're doing in meditation, really kind of any time. Although I will say, I do actually have a couple clients that are on the younger side, so really actually under 25, but these are very unusual clients that I often forget that I'm talking to an 18-year-old, for example. Wise beyond the years, just to say the least. A very shamanic quality to the young people that I see now. And it's very few. I'm talking like less, can count them on one hand. Their state of consciousness has not evolved yet. Think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's a natural progression of the psyche. Think about how I said before, can't feed steak to a baby. This is exactly what I'm talking about. And so we can't expect something that's not realistic. So that's one reason why I don't work with people under the age of 25. The other piece, though, is typically when you're working with people that are minors, and really under the age of 25 at this point, because most kids are on their insurance plan with their parents, their parents' insurance plan until they're 25. So just that as a construct, and what we know about frontal lobe development in neuroscience, that stuff really isn't formed until you're 25 now, and the science and the research backs that up. So anybody that's under 25 to me is an adolescent. When you're working with an adolescent, you're not just working with an adolescent. You're working, it's family work. It's family therapy. Because even if you're not doing the therapy session with the family, you are still having contact with the family. And I cannot, even when I worked, I've worked with clients in their 40s who are, again, like I said in a previous episode, in a real dependent state. They are being taken care of entirely by their parents. And I'll get like the parent to like call me on the phone and be like, okay, if I'm going to pay for this therapy, I want to know that it's working. And so here's what I'm demanding. Here's what I'm requesting. Although it is a demand. Because if I don't give it, they leave. And that's actually what needs to happen because I ain't giving it. Because this is an unreasonable request for the type of therapy that I do. Which is give me a progress report and show me how they're making progress. Now, am I going to work with somebody really truly at the end of the day? I can talk about unconditional love and just being present with people wherever they are. And yes, that's a practice in and of itself. Am I great at it? No. Because what do I want to do? I want to know that what I'm helping you with is actually clicking. And the way that I know that is not necessarily because you're making behavioral changes that can be measured. I'm not a behavioral therapist. I'm not even a clinical therapist. So I'm not going to give a parent some sort of scale that says like, here's what they're doing each week. Here are all the goals we've set. And they've made all these behavioral changes and they're meeting them. To me, that's a bunch of hogwash. Because is there any insight being built? Are there any epiphanies being made about why the person does what they do? Typically under 25, no one's having those types of realizations. It would potentially be harmful, actually. So to me, it's like, yeah, you can measure people's behavior and that will give you some indication, but that's not where I'm looking. The behavior changes are going to come, so I don't even look at that. I'm looking at what is your ability to reflect on yourself and find meaning in your own suffering? Have you come up with some sort of understanding yet as to why you have faced the challenges that you have faced and what patterns are at play underneath all of the experiences and events? And I have an inner knowing based on how the person's responding, how I feel when I'm in the session with them, as to whether or not they're getting that. That's not a measurable thing. You can't see that. You can't touch that. That's not physical. I'm not working in the physical world anyway when I do this work. This is all spiritual, metaphysical transformation that's happening. So it's not something that can necessarily be measured. So I won't work with people that have an attachment to their family. In fact, I won't even accept payment from clients who are going to have their family members pay for their care, because I've tried to find a middle ground with that where it's like, okay, I'm not going to have them even sign a release to speak with the family if they are over 18, because I don't even want that doorway open. But if the parents want to pay that's what has to happen, then fine. Well, that doesn't end up changing anything because they feel like they are entitled to know exactly what's going on with the care. And honestly, I mean, rightfully so. Like, it's your kid, not mine. You're paying for the care. You want to know what's going on. Okay. If you don't have enough trust in your kid and enough trust in me, and maybe you shouldn't, I'm not going to begrudge anybody for that. Of course not. It's just not the type of work that I do, though. So I'm not going to be the right fit. So what have I come up with? Well, don't work with anybody under the age of 25, because no matter how hard I try to make this work fit for them, I end up having to change so much of my model and my approach, and it just doesn't end up working. So that alone, and also family that's going to pay for the person's care, they have to put it on like a gift card. And that person, the client themselves, has to pay me directly, and then they get the receipt for the therapy. They can pass that off to the family. So they're the middle person. They're the middleman, middle woman, middle person. With some exceptions. I do have, like I said, I do see a couple clients right now that are in the adolescent, young adult space. And all of it works really, really well. And it's frankly because their parents have embraced this kind of therapy and they trust their child. And even if their child has struggled in the past, there's a security there with the inner wisdom that they know that their child possesses. And they're right. That's why I'm working with their child in the first place, because they do get it. Very, very rare. Probably less than like 0.05% of the population. And so, I don't know where I was going with that, actually. Where was I going with that? It's a great question. Well, I'll just put that thought out there and see if anything comes back. What was I just talking about? I'll bring it back to the original, though. Being able to jump into different ego tracks. Having different versions of ourselves all existing at the same time. Time not being linear. But being vertical, maybe. I guess that's kind of linear. Not really, though. Horizontal would be linear. Yeah, vertical time. Kind of like you're going up. You're moving up the ladder as opposed to across the street. And so this idea that there are multiple realities existing at the same time, and I can choose to jump into any one I want based on how I think, how I experience the world. Do I experience the world as a wounded person? Am I wounded and mad and resentful and hurt by my life experience? Or do I see great value in everything that has happened to be able to say, okay, I get it now. I am getting it. Something just popped back into my head that was going to lead me into connecting what I was just trying to connect here. When I went off on that tangent, but maybe it'll come back. But the idea of being able to dissolve I wouldn't even say dissolve. Psychedelics dissolve the ego. But surrender the ego enough to understand all of this is pretty wild. So think about this whole archetypal field of energy existing beyond us. In that our mind has a direct relationship. There's a direct pathway between our mind and the archetypal field. And any thought that we have, especially if it's rooted in fear, is going to generate a really specific event and experience and energy to bounce back to us. We are only going to resonate with and manifest from whatever vibration we are currently in. What comes back is the same vibration as to what we put out. And so negativity, fear, anxiety, all of that 3D stuff that really binds us up, and grounds us down into the earth is a mirror image. It'll create a mirror image. Everything's a mirror image anyway. Everything that is in us is reflected to us and the people around us and the experiences around us. It's just, it's never that obvious. I think that's where I was going with it. Parents wanting like a clear-cut way to measure the progress and success. And it's like, it's not, none of this stuff is that obvious. It's like when I started this work, I would try to bring people into the space of like, okay, the person that you're having the reaction to is a reflection of you. And that's like such a literal way to say what I'm saying. So it immediately gives the ego something to defend against, because the ego's job is to see the differences between things, to discern things, to recognize a threat, get you out of the way of the bus that's coming your way. So the ego's job is to be able to say, I'm not that person. Me and that person are nothing alike. How can you say, I'm having a reaction to that person because I would never do what that person does. So how can you say that person's a reflection of me and that's why I'm having the reaction to them? And that's because explaining it in that way is way too literal, and you're trying to take some really in-depth concept and trying to make it way too simplified to the point where you're expecting even language to do it justice, and it really doesn't. All of this stuff is a felt sense. There's a felt shift. It's so trippy because in talking about these multiple ego tracks that we can jump in and out of, I have this experience often now where I'll encounter like the same event that I've encountered in the past, and I can, in real time, I can feel the difference between how I've experienced something or reacted to something in the past and how I'm experiencing and reacting to that exact same thing now. And the crazy thing about it is like my behavior doesn't change at all. Neither do the words that I use or the opinion that I have about the thing. It like doesn't change. It's the energy that changes about it. There's like less panic, less anxiety, less aggression, maybe. It's like a total stillness. And it's like I literally might type out that those same exact words to that person's text, for example, that I would have in the past. But I feel completely different while doing it. It doesn't feel like it's the same experience, but the actions are the same. So I think that's the other piece too, is being able to really see how you're making progress in this work by how you feel about things. Yes, are you thinking differently about things? And are you seeing things from a different perspective? But the real game changer and how you know you're really starting to make the progress that I say is necessary to make in order for this work to be worth it, because I do want to see people make progress at the end of the day. I'm not here to just kind of, yeah. I really, maybe at some point I'll evolve out of that. I don't expect that to happen though, because I think I'm put here on this earth to really give people who want to make these big changes and who can make these big changes and are ready to at the time that they meet me, which by the way, might not be the case for a lot of people. So it's kind of like when a teacher shows up on your path, doesn't mean that teacher is supposed to be there forever. They might show up to just like give you one lesson and then move on. That might be what our contract is together. So I used to get bummed out when like I would get like a bunch of these new clients and a bunch of new referrals, and then like half of them wouldn't come back after the first few sessions, the first few weeks, and it'd be like, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? And I've completely let that go now. That's not even a question on my mind. It's to the point where unless you're reaching out to me to schedule subsequent sessions, I'm frankly not even remembering. I will forget. Like, oh yeah. And like weeks will go by. Oh yeah, I haven't heard from that person. So I'm not even like, that's not even on my radar anymore. Because in my experience, the shifts happen when you start to feel differently about it. That's why it's so important to bring people into the suffering. And that's why people need to be psychologically stable to do the work that I'm bringing them through. Because I am bringing you deeper into the experience of the feeling, the emotion. One of the things that we're here to learn as human beings is the quality of emotions. I'm actually bringing you, you're going to feel more before you're going to feel less. And I need to know that you're capable of doing that. And that you're at a level of consciousness in which that would be safe to do and would make sense to do and would be helpful to do. And I say in the meditations, we're not going into the emotion necessarily. I want you to feel the vibration. I want you to feel the frequency, which is feels so much lighter than the emotion, because the emotion is a human experience, not a spiritual one. So it's very dense, very earthbound, it's heavy. And so I try to frame it like, I don't want you to feel the emotion, I want you to feel the vibration. However, I have come to learn that at first, until you build your way through that, until you navigate that path forward, you start clearing that way for yourself, you actually are going to feel more in the form of emotions than you are going to be than before you can feel less when you feel the vibration. Feel more with the emotion, you feel less when you feel it as the vibration. But it's really a felt sense at the end of the day. That's why I can't measure it. And I can't say, oh, this person's making tremendous progress. I can say that, but that's why parents will be like, well, they're still sleeping until 11 and 12. What is going on with that? When is that going to change? Well, they still won't listen to us. Well, that's because, you know, the problem is that they're listening to you. That's the problem. Sorry. That's also why I can't work with young people that are still living with their parents, because what I have found is that this work gets the child to start stepping into more of their adult archetype, which the parents don't want, because it's like setting boundaries, potentially, maybe if there's a toxic family relationship, setting boundaries so the kid can start figuring out what opinion is theirs and what opinion is their parents'. And I actually have found that a lot of parents have a really hard time with their kids just growing up and becoming adults. And frankly, a lot of times those kids are going to slip into this like rebellion stage first So it actually looks like, oh, my kid's actually resisting me more now that they've been working with you. Not that I've had anybody say that, but I'm sure that has been the case in certain circumstances. I'm sure I can think of plenty, actually. And it's like, oh, we can't have that. That's an indication that the work isn't working. Well, actually, the work is working. That's actually an indication that the work is working. Because my job is to help people move from states of dependence into independence. And a lot of times what that looks like is starting to say no and having your own sense of self. Your own sense of self. Believe it or not, that's why this work is brilliant for people with borderline personality disorder who really don't know who they are. And they're really trying to figure it out. And they grab onto other people and they mimic other people's behaviors and beliefs and opinions. They take all that on because they're, the boundaries between them and other people are so thin, like they're practically non-existent, that they can get flooded a lot emotionally. They can get really confused. They have a hard time making decisions. And what is at the core is a lack of sense of self and a lot of fear, and a lot of fear around abandonment and rejection. And so they learn to attach to other people to find security in that. And that's just really general. Because also, there's a book called Hard to Love, and it's about overcoming male borderline personality disorder, which I have found is so often misdiagnosed as an antisocial or a narcissistic personality disorder. And it's very common. It's very common, I have found. So anyway, off that topic for a second. Back to the original point. Really taking in the idea, understanding time is an illusion, so is space. I am a physical body and my skin ends here, but my energy does not. And my higher self that lives within me also is limitless and knows no boundaries. It goes from me in my heart, in the deepest part of my soul, all the way beyond the cosmos to the limits of our own galaxy. That's how expansive each one of us is as a human being when we look at it from the soul level. And so why would time and space limit us then if we can begin to understand that we are expansive, limitless, non-dual beings where we all share an experience of oneness? We're so hooked in this society of seeing the differences amongst each other. And like, one thing that so like kind of irritates me is how we have fallen into the space where it's like, if I say I understand your experience, I'm somehow invalidating you. We're like afraid to say like, oh no, I get it. Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. No, it's like everybody wants to say like, oh, well, I don't know your experience, but man, that sounds tough. There's nothing more icky than somebody be like, oh, I'm sorry, that sounds really tough. I wouldn't know a thing about that. It's like, oh my God, are you a human being? Have you suffered? Do you have fears? All right, then you get it. Why is everybody so afraid to say like, yeah, I get it. I get it. Yeah, I understand. Oh, I don't know your experience. Well, you know a human experience, so you should have a clue. Everybody got to get out of this. Seeing each other is so different from one another that it's now safe to see each other as different. It's like politically correct. It's socially and culturally acceptable to see everybody as so different from one another. And that everybody's got every different identity, right? Like your racial identity is different from mine. Your gender identity is different from mine. Your cultural identity and ethnic identity is different from mine. Yeah, there are variations amongst the diversity of who we are as human beings. We have diversity of thought. We have diversity of all sorts of experiences. That makes us amazing creatures. What brings us together, though, is to see the commonalities. We're all major players in the collective unconscious, and we all have that. And within each one of us, there is a sea, a pool of information, an ocean, and we're all a part of it, and we all share it. We all have it. We all share it with one another. This is the idea of non-duality. Duality is when we see all the differences amongst each other. And we're moving out of that space. And I encourage everybody to start thinking about how you can start seeing things from a non-dual perspective if you want to make the move into the new earth, into the 5D. We're going to make a leap for it. We're going. Beam me up, Scotty. I'm ready. Let's go. I don't want to stay in the 3D. Worrying about time and money and fear and having no higher purpose. Never really wanted to be there in the first place. Just had to find, had to really just find the route out. And I have found it. So I'm ready. Take me, you guys. Let's go. Let's roll. Elon Musk, you want to start a collective on Mars? Okay. I'm with it. Call me. I'll be there. I'll be able to help out. I'll be a contributing member of the collective. Let's make it happen. So, we're getting ready to move into the 5D, which means we got to start paying off the karmic debt to get off the karmic wheel of the 3D reality to jump into the 5D. And one of the ways to do that is to start seeing time and space as an illusion and to see you being the manifester of your own destiny. And it's all based on how you approach life, how you think, and the energy and the vibration that you hold within you, and what you put beyond you that's going to dictate what reality you are living in. It's the craziest thing, but I feel like when people have these phrases and these mottos about how they live their life, oftentimes they don't take their own advice, but it doesn't mean that they're wrong in what they're saying. My dad's favorite things to say is people are where they are because they put themselves there. And I've learned to understand that from the unconscious perspective of that is 100% true, but it's not always conscious that people are creating their own reality in a conscious way. That's not what's actually happening. It's being done in an unconscious way for the majority of the population. However, we can make our own reality. Whatever life you want and whatever reality you want to live in, you can have. The only thing that is going to limit you is your mind and your ego and the need to feel like you have to rush through time. That's the other thing about time being an illusion. We're timeless beings. We never die. The soul never dies. The body might. And then it will start back up again in a new life. Maybe I'll do an episode on reincarnation, my belief on that. And don't forget, there is free will at the end of the day. So despite what the path might be on how we set this life up to be, free will take us in different directions. I have not even figured that out, how many variations of free will there actually is. I used to think there were only two paths. I definitely don't think that anymore. I used to always think that there was just a higher vibrational expression and a lower vibrational expression. But in this topic today, what I'm highlighting here is that there are many tracks to jump into. Not just a higher and a lower, but many variations in between. And the biggest lesson that we can integrate here on Earth is to really come to a place where we don't just understand that our mind creates the illusion, but that our mind is the illusion, and then how to feel your way through that to get to the other side. Feel your way through the mind being an illusion so then you can step beyond that, step outside of that. So you're not caught in the illusion anymore with the attachment to the material world. And instead, you can see beyond that. The soul is a timeless entity. There's no need to rush through this lifetime to try to get it all done here and move with impatience. Patience is a virtue. And this is coming from somebody who has been the most impatient person for like pretty much all of my life. And I let it just be slow and steady, steady and slow. Let it go and let it flow. That's my motto these days. Let the river guide me through. Don't try to rush to the finish line with my own actions and put all that pressure on myself to be the maker of my own destiny as if there's no other support out there helping me move forward. We think like we gotta like go, 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 move forward, do the work harder, get to the end. achieve, be productive, all the in all these ways. And yes, we do need to be all those things, but we go to the extreme with it. And we think like we're the only ones in charge of this ship. And that's only true in part. There are many other pieces of us that are working at the exact same time, together, in unison. Sometimes they're fighting with each other. And when we find harmony, they're actually all working on the same team. And so the power of choice is essential in remembering. You have the choice. You have the choice to wake up. You have the choice to stay asleep. You have the choice to integrate. You have the choice to stay fragmented. And by the way, now my perception of integration is not just like integrating these many aspects of ourself in this one lifetime. It's about actually integrating who we've been in previous lifetimes, who will be in future lifetimes, and integrating all of the journeys that our soul has made up until this point and will continue to make. So that's the metaphysical integration is now what I'm talking about, not the human integration. Forget that stuff. It's boring. Integration on the metaphysical level, bringing together all the different aspects of our soul and all the different journeys our soul has been on in the many different lifetimes that it has lived. Yep, that's what it is. That's where we're going. Beam me up. That's it. We're here. We're out here. Who wants to go? Who's going to meet me there? And that's the other thing. Time travel? Do an episode on time travel. Julia Mossbridge. Time travel and unconditional love. The Noetic, I think it's what's Institute of Noetic Sciences. Because that's when you're doing, when you're starting to tap into the other dimensions. You're time traveling. Now time doesn't have barriers and limitations or beginnings and ends. This is all the stuff that I'm talking about right now. When this goes into practice, then you're time traveling. That's what it is. Crazy. And I'll just leave you with this. Yes, I'm talking about this in the conscious sense of you can jump these ego tracks. But Dolores Cannon talks about examples of when she's worked with clients and they've had, it's like a crack in the veil, so to speak. And they've seen things, maybe an airport near their house one day, and the next day there's no airport there. They talk about how the person has slipped into another dimension, another reality, a simulation, another concurrently parallel running reality right next to this one in which there is an airport where the person saw it. And they jumped in and they jumped out. That's more on the trippy side of what I'm talking about, the quantum physics kind of holographic spin on what I'm talking about. I'm really, for the sake of today, I'm really just talking about the different flavors that your ego can take. The different ways that you can think in from a consciousness perspective, the different levels of consciousness that is reflected in each track. Food for thought. All right, that's it. I'll leave it there. It's been real, you guys. I will catch you on the next episode. And may the light always lead your way. Be well, everybody. The Third Realm Integration Podcast and related content is intended to provide information and/or entertainment only and is not a substitute for mental health or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Do not delay mental health or medical consultation or substitute a mental health or medical professional's opinion because of what you heard on this show. Seek the advice of your physician or another qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a mental health or medical condition. The host of this podcast does not provide emergency support for mental health or medical issues. For questions or concerns, visit your local emergency room or contact your doctor. I'm going to give you one here, totally astrologically informed by the great Melanie Reinhardt, astrologer. Chiron represents an emerging spirit of philosophical independence, compassion in the face of suffering, and an ongoing process of learning to trust the inner teacher or guide. Okay, there you go. Boom, boom, and boom. Chiron being the archetype of the wounded healer.